This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening. Welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Patrols have now been stepped up as investigations to identify the perpetrators continue. The investigations will establish and find out what was behind this attack.
That's Ugandan Army spokesman Brigadier Richard Karamiri. He's commenting on an attack on naval patrol boat on Lake Edward by the Congolese military. Details coming up. Also, one soldier was killed and another was injured when a Ugandan Navy patrol boat was attacked on Lake Edward. And Nigeria's ruling All Progressive Congress Party has suffered a major setback with the emergence of a breakaway group. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. The warring sides in South Sudan have reached a deal on security arrangements and talks in Khartoum. The government and 12 rebel groups are expected to sign the deal today. The talks are intended to bring a peace deal between forces supporting President Salva Kiir and those backing opposition leader Riek Machar. Their political dispute plunged the new country into civil war in 2013. Talks began last month when the two leaders met for the first time in 2 years in the capital of Ethiopia, Addis Ababa. At the end of that meeting, the two sides declared a ceasefire. However, there are unconfirmed reports of ceasefire violations, with both sides accusing the other of breaking the peace. The agreement on security was reached late last night. It's expected to cover four major issues: demilitarized areas, a time frame within which to unify and reorganize the various forces into one national army, setting up a joint security committee, and deciding on containment areas. The war in South Sudan has killed tens of thousands of people and displaced millions. The Ugandan army has confirmed an attack on a Navy patrol boat on Lake Edward, killing one soldier and injuring another. Earlier reports indicate that the Ugandan boat was hit by the Democratic Republic of Congo Navy patrol, but the Uganda army spokesperson says an investigation is still ongoing. VOA's Catherine Nambi files this report from Kampala.
The attack took place yesterday on Lake Edward along the border of the two countries near the Congolese village of Chavinyonge. Brigadier Richard Karamiri is the Uganda Army spokesperson.
It is confirmed that around 9 a.m. yesterday, Thursday, one boat on routine patrol was attacked by unknown gunmen on Lake Edward using a grenade. One UPDF soldier was killed and another got injured.
The DRC forces are tasked with preventing militia fighters and local rebels and others from neighboring Uganda and Rwanda from operating in the area. According to media reports, the Congolese Navy allegedly attacked the Ugandan army boat after it crossed over to the DRC side. Although Karamiri could not refute the reports, he said investigations into the incident are still ongoing.
Patrols have now been stepped up as investigations to identify the perpetrators continue. The investigations will establish and find out what was behind this attack, who was involved, and indeed the reasons, so that it can help us to put in place active measures to deter such attacks in future.
This comes on the heels of heightened clashes between the Ugandan and DRC forces over waters of Lake Edward. The clashes are said to have intensified at the beginning of this month. The fishermen in the two countries have on several occasions accused each other of encroaching on the other's territory. On Wednesday, a Ugandan patrol boat arrested 18 Congolese fishermen for allegedly casting their fishnets on the Ugandan side of the lake. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
This election season in Zimbabwe, it's quite different from previous ones. For one, Minimal election violence, but most notable, the absence of the two candidates, Robert Mugabe and Morgan Tsvangirai, who were permanent fixtures on the ballot scene. Mugabe was forced out of office by the army last year, and Tsvangirai succumbed to cancer early this year. Another difference this year, international monitors are welcome to observe the July 30th vote. They last observed an election in Zimbabwe in 2002. Reporter Kudza Zanwashi has details.
Elmar Brok, the head of the European Union Election Observer Mission, says the team for this election is extensive.
Over the past weeks, our observers have been meeting a broad range of stakeholders, including the Election Commission, political parties, candidates, civil society and media. For the election period itself, we will have some 140 observers in total, covering voting and counting all over the country.
The team will include members of the EU Parliament. He adds that observers will remain in the field to monitor the process of declaring results and any post-election legal disputes. Brok says the mission will remain behind if there is an election rerun. The Zimbabwe Electoral Commission, known as ZEC, compiled a new biometric voter's roll to be used in the coming elections. Brok says that is a welcome development, but notes problems remain with the voter rolls.
The creation of a brand new biometric voter roll for the elections is welcome. This has been a major effort by the ZEC. However, I understand that a number of contentious issues related to the roll have been evident, including the process for sharing the roll.
Brok says the mission looks forward to seeing the audits of the role that non-governmental organizations are doing. His comments come just days after the leading opposition presidential candidate, Nelson Chamisa, raised concerns over the government's unwillingness to let stakeholders observe the printing of the ballot paper. Mark Stevens is the deputy chief observer of the EU mission and has observed hundreds of elections in the past.
Issues such as observation of the printing of ballot papers, observation of the storage of ballot papers, comes up in quite a lot of elections. Some countries provide for it, some countries don't. Well, what we've discovered in different places is that when such access is provided, it can enhance confidence and it can enhance transparency and credibility, which is why we're fully in favour of it.
The European Union Observer Mission says it will announce its preliminary findings about 2 days after Election Day. For VOA, this is Kudza Zinawashe from Harare.
13 past the hour, you were listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. As the World Cup nears its climax, one of the players being cheered on in Africa is French striker Kylian Mbappe. Mbappe's mother is from Algeria and his father is from Cameroon. Cameroon failed to qualify for this year's World Cup, but many Cameroonians feel they are represented by Mbappe. Moki Edwin Kenzaka reports from Daoula, Cameroon.
Music is blasting from loudspeakers at a popular bar in Makepe, a neighborhood in Cameroon's economic capital, Douala. Until last week, the bar was called Terminus. But when France beat Argentina 4-3 at the World Cup in Russia, the bar was rebaptized Mbappe in honor of the French striker Kylian Mbappe, who scored 2 spectacular goals in the game. Bar manager Marcel Lenny says he wishes Cameroon's national team had a player like Mbappe.
France are performing very well, and if you see them qualifying, it's because of Kylian Mbappe. I wish our football federation could have called him to play for us in the national team. When you look at our own national team, you see there is something missing of which Mbappe has.
Mbappe has a Cameroonian father who is his agent and an Algerian mother. He is one of 15 players on the French squad who were either born in Africa or can trace their roots back to the continent, part of which France ruled at one time as a colonial power. Mbappe became a professional player in Monaco at the age of 16, just 3 years ago. He has never lived nor played in Cameroon, but his performances attracted the attention of the Cameroon Football Federation and he was contacted to play for the national team, nicknamed the Indomitable Lions. But French coach Didier Deschamps already had keen eyes for him. Soccer analyst and former Cameroon Premier League player Gabriel Tiller says it is a great loss that Cameroon failed to get Mbappé to play for his father's homeland.
Mbappé est un joueur vraiment talentueux. Il fallait des gens comme ça dans, pour jouer dans l'équipe camerounaise. Voilà, quand le néglige,
he says they needed Mbappé to bring Cameroon's football back to glory. But unfortunately, their local football federation neglected him. He says it is a shame that Cameroon abandoned football star Mbappé to France at a time when Central African States football has taken a downward turn due to a lack of talented players. Cameroon's national team is the African champion, but the squad was eliminated from the race to the 2018 World Cup after a one-all tie last year with Nigeria. Local football fans say if they had players like Kylian Mbappé, they would have performed better. Nonetheless, thousands of Cameroonian World Cup fans will be glued to their TV sets to cheer on Mbappé, who they see as a fellow countryman playing for a nation with deep ties to Cameroon. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Douala, Cameroon.
Kylian Mbappé didn't score today, but France still advanced to the World Cup semifinals as Raphael Varane and Antoine Griezmann each got a goal in a 2-0 victory over Uruguay. Both teams were undefeated in group play, but Uruguay, which had allowed only one goal in four matches, saw its line of defense slip. Keeper Fernando Muslera dropped Griezmann's shot. Brazil, which is South America's last hope, is playing Belgium right now. So far, Belgium is leading Brazil 1-0. On Saturday, Sweden takes on England, then host Russia plays Croatia. For more details on World Cup action, be sure to stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Libya's government of national accord is asking the Libyan National Army of General Khalifa Haftar to return the recently taken oil installations. The eastern-based army recently took control of the Oil Crescent region and its ports after defeating militant groups there. Mohammed al-Salak, the spokesperson for the Libyan government of national accord, condemns Haftar's actions. He says they undermine reconciliation efforts and the understandings reached at last May's Paris meeting on Libya. Rhiannon Smith is the managing editor of the magazine Libya Analysis. In London, she explained to VOA's Mohamed El-Shenawi the reasons for General Haftar's actions.
First and foremost, I think his move was a reaction to what happened in the Oil Crescent. So because Jazrana and his allies were able to take the Oil Crescent from the Libyan National Army and their allies, and many LNA lives were lost, so a loss of people and communities in the Oil Crescent area, their support for Haftar and the LNA had weakened in recent months, and that's part of the reason that Jazrana was able to make the move that he had. By saying that he would hand over the oil supply and the revenue to the Eastern NOC, this would gain Haftar a lot of popular support and consolidate his support in this area. And finally, it gives him a lot of leverage with the powers in Tripoli and the international community. And, you know, one of the main demands has been for the Tripoli Central Bank of Libya governor, Sadiq al-Kabir, to be removed. And so this is a good way for Haftar to be able to apply pressure and see the changes that he wants to happen in the west of Tripoli.
Would the international community move to save Libya from losing major oil revenues after Tripoli suspended production and exporting oil from ports under Haftar's control?
Yes, the UN and the international community certainly don't want to allow anybody other than the legitimate NOC to be able to export oil. They've been very clear about that in all their statements, and there are a number of UN Security Council resolutions which prevent that from happening. So I don't think they're going to allow the Eastern NOC to export. And I think they will do everything in their power to ensure that those oil ports are handed back over to the Tripoli NOC and apply pressure in that area. What they may also do, and they have done in the past, is that if the Eastern NOC attempts to illegally export crude, then they will most likely send naval forces to try and intercept those crude shipments, as they have done before. And so, yeah, I think that is likely to happen if they attempt that.
So how do you explain Haftar's agreeing in Paris to cooperate in having elections in Libya before the end of this year while continuing using force to impose his will?
I think this has always been part of his plan, in the sense that Haftar has only ever really agreed to elections or to a political solution when they've suited his sort of prerogatives, by attending the Paris conference and agreeing, in theory, you know, nothing was signed, to have elections that boosted his international legitimacy. And he's also helped to undermine the Libyan political agreement, because essentially, by agreeing to hold elections, the LPA and therefore the GNA have less legitimate standing internationally. And this is part of what he's trying to play on now. And ultimately, if Haftar can now use this opportunity to consolidate his military support, to build up his support from people on the ground, then if and when elections are held, then he'll be in a much stronger position to run for the presidency. Or if elections don't happen, then, you know, he's still in a strong position to be able to essentially try and take control of Libya by force or through a series of other deals on the ground.
That was Ridan Smith, managing editor of Libya Analysis. He spoke to VOA's Mohammed El-Shenawi. Nigeria's ruling All Progressive Congress, APC, has suffered a major setback with the emergence of a breakaway group known as Reformed APC. The group accused President Buhari's government of incompetence, abuse of power, impunity, and infidelity. Baba Galadima, a longtime Buhari associate who heads the group, says it will work with like-minded groups to offer Nigeria quality leadership. The APC has dismissed reports of a split in the party. Spokesman Bolaji Abdullahi calls the breakaway group's action mischievous and ill-advised, saying the APC has started an investigation into its membership status. Dr. Emmanuel Onna is a senior lecturer in the University of Lagos Department of Political Science. He spoke with reporter Mike Mbonier about the split. Onna says the new group may not achieve their objective of winning the 2019 election because they are not the authentic leaders of APC.
I'm at a loss as to whether actually there is a split in the ruling party. I am looking at it from the angle of the members of the so-called split splinter group, in the sense that the ruling party has just finished its national convention, and we know all the dramatic personnel there. When I now look for some of these people I'm talking about, I mean people who are coming from the states or people who acted at the national level, I can't see many of them.
The People's Democratic Party had a similar experience before the 2015 election. Do you see a repeat of what happened to the PDP in the 2019 election?
The nature of opposition I've seen to the ruling party is one that has tried to mimic the history of opposition in Nigeria. To mimic, in the sense that they want to do things as it was done before. Genuine opposition, genuine politics does not try to repeat itself. Genuine politics flows from the spur of the moment, from the issues of the moment, of the period, from the disagreements that come out of a particular event or issue, and then they move from there. Things don't have to move the way they moved in the PDP, because the situation of the PDP was different. The situation of the APC now is also different. And if there is going to be a break or whatever, it doesn't have to follow the pattern that the break in PDP took. Because the individuals are different, the situations are different, and so it cannot be the same.
The APC has elected new national officers led by former Governor Adams Oshiomhole to run its affairs. Do they have the capacity to reconcile aggrieved members of the party?
Well, I should think that every party that is a party that is well constituted should have at least the structures to reconcile their members, because a party has offices at the various levels, ward, local government, state, and then national, and even in between at the senatorial level and all that. And I think that these structures have functions, part of which includes to reconcile, to effect reconciliatory measures. We need to look at them for some few more days or months to see how they are moving. Already, Adams Oshiomhole has promised that everybody is important in their party. If he actualizes such a promise, then it means that he will be able to reconcile his members.
Who would the reformed APC have as a candidate running against Buhari?
Number one is that Bubah Galadima, who is supposed to be the leader of a reformed APC, I cannot place him in the APC hierarchy. I cannot place him in the history of APC. APC has also developed as a party over a long period of time, eventually capturing government and then being in government for some time. In all these years, I have not been able to position Bubah Galadima. In the few periods that he came out in recent times, he has come out as an opposition figure. I think that what he's doing is not really a split in APC, because he is not in contact with APC members in the sense of who is who in that party.
In essence, you're saying that they do not have the wherewithal to present somebody who can challenge Buhari in next year's election?
That is not exactly what I'm saying. Bubah Galadima and his group could even have the wherewithal to present somebody against Buhari. It's possible, but I don't think that they can do it under the banner of anything that is associated with APC, because the people who are with him are not really in APC.
That was Dr. Emmanuel Ona, senior lecturer in the Department of Political Science at the University of Lagos, speaking with reporter Mike Mbonye in Lagos, Nigeria. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the sunny side of sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Wickinger, and our engineer, Jonah Cummings, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. On weekends, tune into Nightline Africa at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Savor the flavor of African music. Hi, I'm Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Tune in, feast your ears, and dig in to an hour of amazing Pan-African music, featured interviews, and music news. Music Time in Africa, Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Sporty greetings to all our VOA listeners. This is Sonny Young, host of The Sunny Side of Sports.
We will rock you.
Please join me at 1630 and 1830 UTC, Monday through Friday, for special World Cup updates during the month-long football festival in Russia. Right here on The Voice of America.
Stand up!